Okay, my name is Celeste Strakes with again. A few of you may know me. And what I would like to do is preface what I have to say by this experience that I've had. I feel like what is happening today is a commercial that was put on by one of the local radio or TV stations for a paint company. And if some of you are familiar with it, Reg Croshue and his late son, Jason, are in that commercial. And what you have is the commercial advertises the business and so forth. And what you do is you just see a very quick flick of Reg and his son. And I would say that maybe that flick doesn't even last a minute. And then another part of that same commercial, you see a child licking ice cream. And it just goes on and on. And with Ms. Campbell had to say, that I have to be quick, it reaffirms how I feel. And I think that you find it so often in our communities. Calgary Stampede, we have pagans, bloods, people from Siksika, and you look at them and you have some kind of familiarity with them. And there again, you have somebody, the camera stays on them. But when it comes to us, again, they just go over it. Or there's a commercial, and when they come back on, we're not there. So that is a real kind of oppression. We cannot have a voice. And with what is happening here, I feel that there is so much to say, but I will limit my comments to a few points. Mr. Davidson referred to Bolivia, and one of the things I kind of get involved with is this Canadian Indigenous Biodiversity Network, and I get emails and so forth, and there's a convention of the parties happening in Brazil next week for 2 weeks, and Indigenous people play a very important part there. And Canada prepared a document a month or so ago. And it said that a number of things, that it had generated a mutual respect with Indigenous peoples. And we had a teleconference after that, and some of you may know Art Manuel. He's from BC. He was once chief of the Nisqually First Nation. And he is very active on many issues, land issues and so forth. And one of the things he did is he made written submissions to the World Trade Organization, NAFTA, Standard and Poor's. And with respect to free trade, he said, Canada is basically getting a subsidy because it hasn't paid for Aboriginal and treaty rights. And so anyway, I am going to say that he pointed out that there's a contradiction. And I guess there are many contradictions here, and they're present in this. In our table, we discussed there was one implied contention that Mr. Davidson made with respect to Treaty 7. He talked about ownership. And basically, what I heard him saying is that the Blackfoot Indians, Blackfeet Indians, Pagans, Bloods, Siksika, they had no notion of ownership. And that is wrong. We do have our systems and institutions, but they're not synonymous with what you find in Western society. And I think that has to be corrected. In our table, we were discussing the point that the foundation for the Western jurisprudence on property is Christianity. And that is something that we should look at. It goes from the book of Genesis. John Locke, a philosopher who justified how to get a property interest by putting your labor into the land. And looking at what's here, his closing comment about how horrible reserves are. Well, I think that you look at how that is measured. One of the ways it's maybe the only way to measure it is the best interests of the child doctrine. That is embedded in white or Western values. And right now, I have one more comment to make. I think that Roy Davidson, yes, this is my question. Roy Davidson, in the information that has been presented, he talks about maybe having a softer side. But I think there's a real injustice. Next week, there's a big conference in Ottawa, the Aboriginal Policy Conference. There are many, many people. And one of the things that, when I first heard about it, was hosted by three entities. And one of them was Friendship Centers, the other one Indian Affairs, and this Ontario University. And they're going to be developing policy. And I guess looking at it, in the early 90s, I was concerned about individuals like Roy Davidson, that they were dealing with matters on governance, and they had no place to represent us.
Can you
no basis. So I ask, are you willing to apologize for this conference that's being hosted by Friendship Centers, where you're going to be further oppressing us with the policy that's going to come out of there?
Good question. Thanks a lot.
Two comments. First of all, Celeste's comment of a different type of ownership, I would agree with that. I don't think that Celeste would suggest that any band or band member would say that this piece of ground belongs to me. But most definitely, there was some sense of this is our land, we defend it, my goodness gracious, that's what it was all about, was defending it. In relation to the conference in Ontario, I'm not entirely sure I understand your question. I don't know what there is to apologize for, except that more of us, I think, need to be aware of what the issues are. I almost understood Celeste to say, I should be there. I'd be happy to go there.
No, I'd be happy. You should apologize. You're not a native person. And yet, you're going to be
okay.
Your organization, your director
moment,
of a Friendship
please.
Center. And Friendship Centers right now are dominated by non-native people, non-Indigenous people like me, and you're going to be setting up policy.
I'd just like to comment that if you're not at the mic, you're not going to be heard. If you're not at this mic, you will not be on television.
I don't care to be on television.
We have another question.
Anyway, I would agree, Celeste, I would agree that we need to be involved and we need to understand all of the things that she's saying.
Hi, my name's Nadine. I'm from the Blood Tribe. I'm a student at the university. I'm really not sure what you were trying to say with your presentation. I'm left with some questions here. Like, the only issue that I can see is your parenting. And in my defense, I think I'm a pretty good parent. I have three kids, all alcohol and drug-free, all in school. So I just don't understand, like, what was your point about the reserves? You didn't really talk about abolishing reserves, why and how. And so, you know, I'm just left with all these questions. I'm not sure where you're going with that. So I'd just like to know, like, really, what is your stance on reserves other than we don't have good parents there?
Good question. First of all, the title to this presentation ends with a question mark. The final act of genocide. I'm not sure if it is. If I gave the impression that I think that Native people are not good parents, then I gave a wrong impression. That's not what I think. But what I do think is because of all the stuff that came to bear on Native people since Treaty 7, continuing right up until the end of residential schools, it made it very, very difficult for parents to parent kids who weren't even there. And so I have seen a tremendous amount of social problems arising out of the fact that kids bounce from pillar to post and pillar to post, and they are going to mom, to auntie, to grandma, back to auntie, to another auntie, to grandma, and stuff like that. There is no way that's even the traditional way that Native children were raised. They were raised by a community, very much so, but they still had parents who knew how to parent. What I'm suggesting is that in all too many cases, not in every case, but in all too many cases, Native people have lost skills, ordinary social skills, including the skill of parenting, because those opportunities have been taken away from them. That's what I'm trying to say. That's what I mean to evidence by saying, for example, parenting. If you have a mom and a dad whose kids are taken away from them for 10 years, and then they come back as adults, they've lost the opportunity to parent. Those kids don't know how to parent. They're raised by an institution. In terms of the Indian reservation, should they be abolished? I'm just one person. I happen to believe that they are an albatross around the neck of the native people. I don't know what the answer is and how to get rid of them if we get rid of them. One thing I do know is that to have white people railing on native people and native people railing on white people is not the answer. What I suggest to you is that there needs to be some understanding. I think more white people need to understand how native people got to be where they're at before they can effectively deal with, to use the American government, the Indian problem. I don't see it as an Indian problem. I see it as our problem.
Hello. I just want to make sure I'm heard here. Good afternoon. My name is Jacqueline Short. I'm a student at the University of Lethbridge. I'm a Cree from Northern Alberta. And I'm assuming we're all here to discuss the same issue here, and that's understanding Native reserves and the problems that are currently happening in them today.
I'm nervous.
No, I'm not getting your
point. I've been doing a lot of thinking.
Don't hold on. Just
sorry.
Speak into it.
Okay. I've been doing a lot of thinking about the issue of Native reserves, because I have lived on one. I've also lived in general society as well. And there are a lot of problems. I totally understand what the fella here is talking about. But I think we're at a time in our life where we need to start educating our children and general society at large about Natives, period, about our history and our present and where it is that we as a nation need to go together. As for reservations, which is a term that's used for the Americans, Canadians up here, we're on reserves. So if you want to be politically correct, that's the term. A little bit of education there for you. But as for reserves, and having come from one, there are a lot of big problems, huge, huge problems. But personally, I don't believe that taking them away from us is an answer. And I also personally believe that for non-natives to come onto our reserves and to try and fix our problems and to work with us isn't an answer either. That if we invite you onto our reserves, it's because we trust you and we want you to help us. That's the only way that I think we can help to mend these problems. To abolishing them, I think that's wrong. It is our home. It is what we have, little that has been left to us. And granted, yes, we do have these problems, sir. But my question is that how are you as general society going to educate your people about us and about to appreciate who we are so that maybe in turn we can appreciate ourselves as Native people, because many of us still don't.
Very well put, and I would have to say I agree with what this lady says. I don't want to come on saying I have all the answers. What I am saying is that for a long time I didn't even have a clue about the answers or the problem. And what I am inviting you people to do is educate yourself as to what's gone on and how Native people have arrived at the place that they are. Far be it from me to say, I have the answer and you just need to have me come along and give you the answer, because I absolutely don't have the answer. I am aware of a problem. I'm aware of the problems on the reserves. I'm also aware of this problem where white people and Native people can't see eye to eye, don't see eye to eye. And I think it's because you people, you Native people, have a good understanding of how you got where you got. But I don't. We don't. And I think that we in the dominant society, if I can use that offensive term, need to educate ourselves and need to understand that stuff. That's my point.
Oh, you mean, I thought you were a reporter.
Oh, no. Well, I play the part good. Hi, my name is Dillian. I'm from the University of Lethbridge. I'm with another group of students here from the Native American Studies Department at the university, where we day-to-day... Oh, sorry.
Do you want me to start again?
It's hard because it's still normal. You have to kiss the mic.
Oh, geez, I'm not good at kissing. Sorry, I'll just repeat. We're students at the University of Lethbridge in the Native American Studies program. So day to day, we go in and learn the things that sort of a tidbit of what you guys are learning today. From what I heard from Roy's talk, and it has to do with the reserves as well, he talked about how these people don't fit, or the children aren't going to become contributing members of society. At what point do we draw the line, or whose society is he comparing them to? These children, are they not contributing to Lethbridge City society? And at that point, is our society, is Lethbridge as a city, contributing to their society upon the reserve? So my question for Roy is, whose society are you comparing these people to, and at what point do you have the right to say that it's not run well? And just to add to that, he, in a common answer to another question, stated that we shouldn't be having white people railing Native people and Native people railing white people yet. He states that there is this dichotomy of the reservation and the society. Well, what about the problems with all the single parents in the city that aren't raising these contributing members of society that aren't Native? Where is that problem looked at, and what point do we put those all on the same level?
Good point. First of all, the kids. I know a lot of people I got to get on my knee. I know a lot of people on the Piikani Nation who are concerned that their children are going nowhere. By my standards, by your standards, by their standards, they're concerned that they're languishing and not doing anything. I think there's a fairly widely accepted understanding that education is important. But lots of Native kids are not graduating from high school, not going on to university. Now, that's sort of the white man's world. That's the white standard of success. You know, we have a two-car garage and all that rot. I'm not necessarily saying that's the standard that should be imposed, but what I am saying is that there are lots of people on the reserve, and I don't think Celeste would disagree with me, where kids are not succeeding in any way. Great concern is that kids are not even interested in traditional things. Great awakening of Native traditions and things like that, but too many kids are not even interested in that. And so I think it's common ground that kids are not thriving. The other question was, help me.
Maybe before you get to that point, it's not a matter of whether the children are succeeding or not succeeding. It's a matter of government policy today, where there's a one-way migration off the reserve, and that conference that's happening next week is going to add on to that policy, which is genocide. So as a member, director of the Migration Center, you are committing genocide against the Piikani Nation.
Thank you. Ma'am, the last part of your question just kind of slipped me.
I think somebody else. There's someone waiting down. Let's have the next question. There's another question.
Oh, okay. Who's determining success? I guess I go back to the first part of the comment that, I mean, if young people are not thriving in any society, then it's a problem. Yeah.
I just have to take some notes down so I remember what I need to voice. And I may have a question. My name is Patricia Yellowhorn Melton. I'm from Piikani Nation, from the nation that the lawyer comes on often. I've never seen him there, but I'm sure he does come on. And I appreciate your stance, sir. But I think the only ones that can really define who we really are as people is ourselves, as the First Nations people in Canada and in America. No one else can define who we are as a people. I myself went to a boarding school for 8 years, forcibly taken there. And we had no say-so. My parents had no say-so. If they didn't let me go there, they may have been imprisoned. They would have been in trouble. And while I was at boarding school, I was never acknowledged. I was never given hugs. I could never talk to my brother, who was on the other side of this school that we were in. We were segregated. We weren't allowed to talk during meals, during school, even English. We weren't allowed to talk our Blackfoot language. Our decision-making rights were taken away. I did not know how to communicate. When I left that boarding school, I was like a zombie because everything we were told to do, everything. We had no rights to even cry even. We were told to shut up, just go, you know, go to the corner and cry, you know. Why are you crying? Cry baby. So we were called all kinds of names. And yes, it's true, all this had a great impact upon my life. I'm at this point standing up here by the grace of my Lord. Otherwise, I would be a statistic. Like some of my friends there, I probably would have died from alcohol many, many years ago because of that impact it had upon me as a child. So, you know, that's why I'm saying right now that it's only up to us as Native people to begin to redefine who we really are as a people and not allow the majority population to rule over us and to tell us what we have to do to fix our problem. It's up to us to fix our own problem. And the way that I began was with myself. I began to really know who I was. I had to find out who I was spiritually, physically, emotionally, and mentally. And like I mentioned, by the grace of the Great Spirit, my Lord, that I am here today. And I just would like to say that we've heard many questions from mainstream society that have asked, well, what is the difference between a boarding school in Europe and this boarding school here? We had no choice. We were forcibly taken there, and our parents had no choice. And we spoke a different language. It was a complete culture shock to the children that went there. And if I could, one day I am going to write about my experience because it did have a very big impact upon my life. But I am here today because of my Lord. And I just have a question for you. And I know that you mean well, sir. And I would just like to know what the real outcome of your study is of, about our people, you know, the impacts of society, genocide, or whatever. What's the real end result that you wanted to come to? Thank you.
If I accomplished anything by speaking today, it was that you heard that lady speak, because I agree with everything that she says. I appreciate what she says, and I hope you people will take to heart her experience, and I hope that this organization may give some consideration to giving an opportunity for people like that to be heard. What's the outcome for me? I guess the outcome for me is a different understanding than I grew up with. I grew up with what I think was probably pretty typical white Southern Alberta understanding and... lack of understanding. So I do not fault Native people for all the negative stuff that I have seen cast upon their shoulder. I understand why, I even have some sense of understanding why alcohol abuse and hopelessness and despair and things like that. Where maybe previously I was judgmental and said, well, you know, you shouldn't be that way. I have a different understanding of that. I understand why it's that way. I don't know what to do, but I would sure like to do something. And if there's anything that I can do, maybe apart some people think from just shutting my mouth, I'd be happy to do that.
Good afternoon. My name's Colby Eaglebear. I'm a university student, and I just have two questions. You're saying that you're wanting to get rid of the reserves. My question is, where are the people to go? And my second question is, what is it really going to solve by just taking a reserve away?
Well, remember the question marks. I'm not positive that the best thing is to get rid of the reserve. By the same token, I'm not positive that the reserve is advancing anything. I defer to your wisdom and Celeste's wisdom and the wisdom of the people who live there. But my concern with the reserve is, in my experience, I have seen more people perish than thrive on the reserve. If we can keep the reserve and make it a place where Native people flourish and thrive, then by cracky, let's do it.
Just time for another couple speakers' questions here.
I'm John L. Tailfeathers from the University of Lethbridge, and I work with teachers from all different backgrounds. And I know that there has not been very much information, if any at all, in the curriculum, the Alberta curriculum, teaching an honest, authentic, historical account of what has transpired. Most people are just going in ignorance, and many times it isn't your fault because you have not been taught in the schools. And no people, you might have been born in Blackfoot Country, you might have been, have a farm in Blackfoot Country, you might be working here in Blackfoot Country, you don't know it's even Blackfoot Country. And when you talk about doing away with the reserves, when you think about the traditional Blackfoot territory, which the northern boundary was the North Saskatchewan River up by Edmonton, the Cree were on the other side of the river. We controlled the land from the North Saskatchewan River all the way down to the Yellowstone, Old Faithful, over to the bottom part of Saskatchewan, the Cypress Hills, and over to the Rocky Mountains, most of the state of Montana. That was our traditional territory. If you can close your eyes and visualize a land base that large, and you see what we have left, the little pittance of land that we have left of our traditional Blackfoot territory, and you say, well, shall we do away with reserves? I don't think that's a decision that should be made by mainstream society, but instead be made by our own people, the people that live on those reserves. We're making improvements, and I think generally human beings are becoming better and better at being human beings all the time. And our people have been through a real struggle, and to even see standing up here speaking to a group like this is really amazing. I give the Creator thanks all the time that I am still alive, that I wake up, and here I am, a Blackfeet woman from Montana. And I must say that I am from the Mountain Chief clan. And it's amazing that any of our people are still walking today. And if we're bitter, please just be patient because we're going to educate you. And I just, and people like Mr. Davidson as well. Sometimes the message has to come from without to be heard, because we can cry and complain and complain, and you aren't going to listen. You're just say, oh, here they are again. Here they are again. They're mad. They're whatever. Complaining. But when you hear it from someone like Mr. Davidson, maybe you'll listen. And I really commend you on trying to find out what exactly has transpired, because there are people who are born here in the city of Lethbridge that don't have a clue what had went on just a little ways across the river on the Blood Reserve, the Pagan Reserve, and in regards to residential schools, and what was going on with us. And it used to be popular to look down on Indians, but it's getting so that it is not anymore. And thank you for your work. I don't have any questions.
Hear, hear. I'll accept that as a question.
Ted Buchanan is my name, Mr. Davidson, and I thank you for your discussion. I don't have near the knowledge of the problems that are facing these people. I'm currently struggling to read through a book called Stolen Continents, which is written by Ronald Wright, and he goes back to the history of in the 1400s of the first time they started coming over here. And one of the expressions that I find in there, and I find I can only cope with so much of this reading, and I just feel sick at what's transpired, that I have to put it down for a while. But one of the things that I find really disturbing in there is the term to civilize and Christianize these people, and I find that very disgusting. But my question to you, sir, is one that's been bothering me for a while, is dealing with the Lubicons. And 15 years ago, they were trying to settle a deal with them to set up their proper rights up there. And the only way the government would deal with them if they refused to lay claim to a certain portion of land. Is that being fair to those people?
I'm not familiar with all the